Good afternoon. Welcome in. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Just after 2 o'clock, it's Wednesday, the 30th of October, 2024. Coming up in 2 hours at 4 o'clock, we will be giving away tickets to see the Capitals and the Penguins. And at 5 o'clock, we will blitz the NFC East, the latest on all the teams Washington's competing with in the division. Hello, Danny.
What's up, buddy? I'm sorry, if you don't mind. Thinking about all those Rangers fans had to watch that last night. That's tough, right? I mean, you're just getting to your seat. And Ovechkin's already scored twice, and one of your tough guys gets his ass kicked, and it's kind of awkward. You know what I mean? I just feel bad. I'm excited for the game, and then you get that happen. I'm sorry about that for them Rangers guys.
They activated Matt Rempe to get into a fight so that Dylan McIlrath could beat him up.
How'd that go?
And then Ovi scored a couple times in the first period. That was as quality a really just hockey game as I've been at in a long, long time. But certainly the early part of the first period, about 5 minutes in.
Yeah, get to your seats, people.
I got a fist fight between two heavyweights at center ice. They drop their lids. They skate in circles. They might as well have just had a spotlight right in the middle of the ring, so to speak, for Dylan McIlrath and Matt Rempe. And then you have Ovi scoring a couple of times. The Caps exploding for their most shots in a couple of years. 46 shots on net. This team can skate. They've got more speed. They've got more skill. That's a really good Rangers team they beat. They hung five on last night. People were jacked up leaving the arena, and they should have been.
Yeah, it's a fun one.
That was a blast of a game to be at. I love what Spencer Carberry said after the game. He said, I'm really glad this game was on national TV because this game was good for the sport.
Yeah, we were very fortunate last night, of course, that everyone got to witness it. We were so accountable on both ends of the ice. Dude, some idiot yesterday, I don't know if you remember this, on the radio in the afternoon, 106.7 The Fan, okay? Right before their show ends, they do this Caps preview. You know what I'm talking about? They do this Caps preview thing where it's like, hey, get you ready, the game's tonight. This is what you got to look forward to. It's a good little hit,
they
right?
They call it their Caps power play.
Yeah, good little segment. So they go back and forth real quick, and then it's like, okay, get you set for the game, things you need to know. This one idiot, I mean a dope, goes, well, the Rangers come in, leading the league in goals allowed. It's probably going to be a low-scoring game. Not going to have that many opportunities, not that many shot chances. What a buffoon. Whoever said that is stupid. Stupid.
After last night's game with two goals, Alex Ovechkin has 4 goals in 8. He's on pace for 41 goals over 82 games.
Now, why is that significant? Why is
that significant? That would get him just past the threshold.
Would you look at that?
And just like that, he is on pace to break Wayne Gretzky's record. It's not going to be easy.
No.
But it was a fun night last night. I'll give you a little more deets on the Ovechkin performance because I sat about 5 feet away from his wife. So if you noticed, after his first goal last night, he skated right over to me with a big smile on his face and stood in front of me and right on the glass.
He said, hi to you.
Oh, wait, it was his wife.
Oh.
She was next to me.
He's like, let me get over. Grant is there.
I said to her, she posted an Instagram, like Instagram was a video of her reacting to the goal, and then you see me come over and give her a fist bump. I had no idea she was recording it for her Instagram.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny. But in my mind, I'm thinking, wow, Ovi recognized me and came over and wanted to dap me up through the glass. And I said to her, I'm like, he saw me. He was so excited. She started cracking up. I was like, you see his face? He was clearly happy to see
me. He was so thrilled. I can't believe Grant is here, first row.
What a game.
Awesome.
A lot of fun for the locals last night. I will blitz the East at 5. We got the Caps tickets to take on the Penguins at 4. I want to start with the Commanders, though. They have, according to the ESPN analytics department, they run every game. They have a permutation of kind of the rest of the season that they do with their calculations. And they ran this, and they've got the Caps at 40, excuse me, the Commanders, more like it, at 45.2% likely to win the NFC East. They have them at over an 80% chance, by the way, to make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
They have them at a slightly below 50% chance to win the division, though. And I got to tell you, Danny, that's too low for me. They think it's more likely that the Eagles, who they give a 51% chance to win the East, finish number one in the division than Washington, who's at 45.2%.
This, to me, was a product, and that's why I said before the season that I thought Philadelphia would win this division. Now, I had no idea Washington would be good at all. I thought it would be between Philly, of course, and the dumb Cowboys. But Philadelphia's schedule is soft. They're in it now, right? After they beat Cincinnati, that was going to be a game where I wasn't quite sure who would show up, if that was going to be the good group or not from Cincinnati that's, you know, fighting for its season. But it's a nice, soft landing spot out of their turmoil, out of their bye week, right? Cleveland, Giants, Bengals, Jaguars, all losing teams picking in the top six or seven in the NFL draft. Maybe, well, not the Bengals.
They've already played three of those. Let's look at their remaining schedule.
Yeah.
And I want to compare it to Washington's, because my contention is that the Commanders have a Charmin soft schedule. Their schedule couldn't be easier the rest of the way. So the Eagles have the Jaguars, not good. The Cowboys twice, right? Washington twice. So those will cancel each other out, because the Commanders also play in those two games and have the Cowboys two times. They play the Rams. I don't think that's going to be that fun. They still play the Ravens. They still get to play the Carolina Panthers as well, who Washington's already played. And then they also play the Steelers, who Washington has, and the Giants. Okay? Mm-hmm. For the Commanders, they've got the Giants, the Steelers, Eagles and Cowboys combined four times, the Titans, the Saints, the Falcons, and the Cowboys. So the games that are different the rest of the way, Philly's got Baltimore, the LA Rams, and Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm.
Washington has the Titans, the Saints, and the Falcons. The Commanders have an easier remaining schedule than the Eagles do. The idea that you're going to say, and I don't mean Danny Ruye as much as ESPN, that Philly's got a better chance to win the division than Washington is just you relying upon the history of what these two programs have recently been. That you think the Eagles are more authentic because coming into the year, you're confirming your prior that they were better. That you've seen them play in a Super Bowl. You've seen Jalen Hurts play at the NFC Championship game winning level. You haven't seen it from Washington, so you don't believe it yet, which is fine. That's not a crime. But that is the only reason I can come up with why, if you watched the first half of both of their seasons at this point, Washington 6-2, Philly 5-2 with squeaker wins over New Orleans and the Cleveland Browns, or the Commanders blew out. You can't tell me the Eagles are a better team right now than the Commanders. I don't buy it.
So I think that's they're close. Right, it's hard to compare one without the other before we see them play each other, and when you play is probably more important, of course, than whom. But you're right; it's the fact that they're probably eye to eye or close to it, and the pedigree. Like last year when they swooned and were terrible, still won 11 games. You know what I mean? Like that's a pretty bona fide program. And despite all of the turmoil of the first part of the season, where everything was bad and Nick Sirianni's yelling at fans, and you know everything's rotten there, they've turned in their two best performances of the season over the last couple of weeks, outscoring their opponents 65-20, including a divisional game. So when Washington plays the Cowboys is going to matter in this equation as well. You know, Micah Parsons' health, when he comes back, if it's the same Cowboys team that we've seen, I would certainly favor Philadelphia there in a couple of weeks. But if Parsons is back, maybe they're healthier. That's a different story. Washington didn't play him until later. But I mean, Philadelphia's schedule is pretty forgiving, as is Washington's, I would say. I think that's a good point.
Would you agree with me that the Commanders' remaining schedule is easier than the Eagles?
I would not.
Really?
Yes, because Jacksonville, Carolina, the first Cowboys game, I think are gimmies for them. The Cowboys is a bit more of a stretch.
Washington plays the same Cowboys team twice that the Eagles do. So
they play them later.
Washes.
They play them later, okay. which I think is going to matter.
Well, I mean, when they're out of the playoffs, as an example.
So it could go either way.
I mean, the Commanders are going to play them in Week 18. It won't matter. I mean, that game is going to be a non-factor. The Cowboys will be eliminated.
There is one bad team remaining on Washington's two out of it, irrelevant, probably should trade everyone at the trade deadline teams on Washington's schedule, Tennessee and the Saints, right? Other, you know, divisional games, the Giants aren't any good, but I'll let you know when they pull away from the Giants. I'll let you know when they dominate the Giants at any point in time in my lifetime. I'll see you there. But for Philadelphia, you add up Jacksonville, Carolina, both teams that are irrelevant, and I've already started to trade people away. So it's pretty similar. And then they're playing Dallas at a better time, I would say.
They play Baltimore still. That is better than any team on Washington's schedule.
Mm-hmm. So that is a tough game.
I don't see a game the Commanders play right now on their schedule, and it could change, where they're going to be more than a couple of point underdog. Or it's a pick 'em or they're favored. What game, if they played it today, would you be surprised if they won?
None of them.
Yeah, so for me, I would say I'd be surprised if the Eagles beat the Ravens. I'm glad Washington doesn't have to play the LA Rams in a few weeks. I think that's probably the second hardest game either team's going to play outside of the division. You can make the case the Eagles have both of those. Now, the Steelers is maybe harder than that, but both of them play the Steelers. So I'm taking the common opponents out of it and just saying, who are the teams that they each play that the other one doesn't? I think if I'm ranking those, the two hardest games of those are both games the Eagles are going to be playing.
I think that's fair. The Eagles haven't shown a propensity to fall apart against the Giants, I would say, whereas Washington, it's going to be a two-point game almost regardless. I mean, my point is it's not this giant gap where Washington is playing, you know, 1AA schools and Philadelphia's got a buzzsaw. I think they're very eye of the beholder. I think they're pretty close.
Yeah, I think, though, like, I look at common opponents so far this season, right? And the Browns, as an example, could have easily beaten the Eagles 20-16, and Washington throttled them 34-13. The Bucs blew both of them out. The Saints was a 15-12 game. I guess we haven't seen that game yet, but my guess is it's not going to be a field goal game when Washington plays against New Orleans. But it's the bottom line of a first-place schedule versus a last-place schedule.
Mm-hmm.
The team that won the division last year gets a harder schedule. And halfway through the season, maybe what the schedule looked like before the year started.
Sure. You're going, oh, Rams, that's a tough spot. Well, man, and it might turn out to be, but if you asked me 2 weeks ago, dude, they get the Rams, what a gimme. Maybe not now.
What metrics do you use generally to determine legitimacy? Because one of my favorites is just scoring margin, and the Commanders are plus 69 right now, which is nice.
Which is nice.
The Eagles are plus 39. The Commanders have outscored opponents by 70 points. The Eagles have outscored opponents by 40 points. If you look at where they rank in the conference, in scoring margin, Washington 6th, Philly's 13th. If you look at where they rank overall among 32 NFL teams in scoring margin, points forced, points allowed rank, Washington 13th, Eagles 26th. In terms of like the actual rankings, not the scoring margin. I guess I shouldn't conflate the two. But again, they're twice as good in that ranking as Philadelphia is. Just some of the main metrics I use. What metrics would be used based on these 8 weeks of football to say that Philadelphia is better than Washington?
I can't make that case. I'm not going to.
And that's my whole point.
Well, but so my response is, though, I would go, you could say they're pretty close. I mean, you look record-wise, they escaped a couple of games. They've been dominant here lately over the last couple of weeks, playing better football as the year goes. And pedigree. And your point, I think, is a good one. And I think we probably fall into this trap a little bit year over year sometimes, where we assume last year's results are predictive of the following season, when teams go from worst to first all the time and vice versa. But there is this Eagles program, generally better viewed than Washington's program over a decade, two decades, three decades, et cetera. And that's correct. So they have earned more benefit of the doubt there, I think.
Is that part of the actual data, though? Because I'm not basing it on a power rankings or a likeliness that some guy who works for NFL.com is putting together for winning the division. This is their ESPN analytics department tells you Washington is 82% likely to make the playoffs, but only 47% likely to win the division, whereas the Eagles are 51% likely to win the NFC East. And I guess my question is, when they spit out that number, you're putting something in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm imagining it's record and a winning percentage of remaining opponents and home versus road and all those things. Is there a spot there where part of what you feed the engine that eventually prints out that number, is it, here's the record for this team over the last 3 years? Because that's an idea of, or is it a fluke or is it not? I don't know the answer to that.
I don't either. I wouldn't assume so, right? I mean,
that's what I'm wondering is like, how does it tell you if it's just using the information without looking like the rest of us are? Because I can look at the Eagles and the Commanders and say, oh, I trust the Eagles a lot more than Washington because Washington's Washington. They're going to Washington. But how does the computer looking at only those numbers say,
it's a great question.
This team with the harder schedule who hasn't been as good so far this season is actually going to overtake the team that's been better?
So I would assume, and again, I didn't put any numbers in any machine, but this is my best guess here.
Yeah.
Take it back. I invented the whole thing. So My best guess would be they do predictions for week one, even though we don't know anything yet. We think we do based on last year and offseason and whatever kind of data. I would guess if there's a Jalen Hurts in November in his career has done X, does that number get in there? Nick Sirianni has gone for it X number of times after halftime when trailing. Does that go in there? He may not have done it this year yet, but you know, is that part of the factor? Like, the more data, the more predictive we can usually be about future events. This is still very limited data for Washington compared to, you know, teams that have had kind of the same program going for a few seasons, right? So I'm wondering if maybe that has something to it. So not specifically like, yeah, the Eagles were good last year. The Eagles were good 2 years ago. Or they got to the Super Bowl that time. I don't know that plays in because there's a lot of roster turnover in this league, but key people or key players might have some data sprinkled in there that maybe gives them an edge. This is me hypothesizing.
Makes sense. I'm looking for hypotheses. I don't have an answer for it. I got a tweet here. I'm at Grant H. Paulson. Danny's at Funny Danny on all things social. Jay just said, are you just writing the Steelers off as a win already? Absolutely not.
I'm not, no.
I don't know where you got that idea or what you were listening to. What I said is I'm taking the teams out of the conversation that both the Eagles and the Commanders still have to play. Those are common opponents. So if I'm trying to figure out who has a easier remaining schedule right now, then I'm looking at the games that only one of the two teams has to play, and how do those schedules differ? Because otherwise, you're playing the same Dallas team twice. You're playing the same Pittsburgh team. Pittsburgh could sweep both of those NFC East games. Would not surprise me. I would tell you, though, I'm not afraid of the Steelers, because while their offense has been a lot better the last 2 weeks with Russell Wilson at quarterback, I don't trust him, and I don't think their offense is that good. I can't wait for that game because I think it's going to be a blast to watch Washington's offense operate against the Steelers' defense. And by the way, that game is at home a week from Sunday. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Yes, indeed.
I got some good memories over the years of Steelers games at home. None of them fun memories of wins, but of just the invasion of the terrible towels and the atmosphere being awesome because it's almost like college vibes of half the stadium being Steelers fans, half being Commanders fans. And I actually think that'll be a nice little test for where we are in terms of pushing.
Because remember those takeovers. What was it, week one a few years ago? I remember that it was the entire stadium was black and gold. Not the new Washington uniforms that they wear as the alternates, but the actual Steelers colors.
That was 2016, I think.
Sounds right, yeah. They
week
lost the opener.
One, I think Antonio Brown beat Bashaud Breeland for a couple of touchdowns, if memory serves. That was a lot of momentum going into that game. We thought maybe the Commanders were about to be, at the time they were the Redskins, good because they were coming off of their four-game winning streak at the end of 2015 to win the division. And then remember, they were up 11-0 on the Packers and Aaron Rodgers at home in a playoff game before they lost that playoff
game. One hard count changed the world.
Yeah, it certainly did. Which Robert Saleh probably wouldn't have liked Aaron Rodgers doing.
Oh, you can't do that. You just, we got to clean up those counts.
MGM National Harbor listener lines can be opened up. Let's do that now. Here's the question. This ESPN data churns out that the Commanders are very likely to make the playoffs, but that the Eagles are more likely to win a division that Washington has led for 7 weeks, where the Commanders have, we think, been the better team so far, and I think has the easier schedule remaining. If you had to bet right now on the Commanders or the Eagles winning the division, who would you bet on and why? Do you think Washington wins the NFC East or not? And do you care that much as long as they make the playoffs if they win the division or not in what is starting to feel like a way ahead of schedule, house money type season? You're listening to Grant and Danny. With Danny, I'm Grant. This is The Fan. Thank you for making the show part of your day. Hit us up. 800-636-1067. You want to chime in on our conversation on the NFC East. I think the Commanders should be the favorites right now. That is a different thing to say than they are definitively going to win it. But in my opinion, Danny, they have been the best team in the division through 8 games. I don't even think that is refutable. I think that's pretty obvious when you dig in on any of the numbers. Record, margin of victory, quality of the offense, defense trending up, etc. And I think there's a pretty easy case to be made that they have the easiest remaining schedule. We didn't even take into account travel, by the way, where Washington has been at home for consecutive weeks. Its last road game was in Baltimore. They have not gotten on a plane since they were in Arizona in September.
Yeah, think their furthest travel is to New Orleans, which is not an outrageous bit of travel. It's basically Eastern Seaboard. The teams they play from, quote-unquote, further away are home games. Tennessee, Atlanta, and those aren't, you know, you're not going to Osaka for that, you know?
But when's the last time you remember that? I mean, you got to think about this as September they're in Arizona, that same road trip when they flew out to the Bengals game. How long ago was that you and I were at that Monday night football game with Kondori and Murad and our crew out there loving life, hanging out with our boy Thommy, right? That was the last time they got on a plane legitimately. Since then, they have played at home against Cleveland, taken a bus up the BW Parkway to Baltimore, played at home against the Panthers, played at home against the Bears. They could take a train. I don't know how they're traveling to New York this weekend.
You might fly. You might train.
That's a four-hour drive. It's a 3.5-hour or 2.5-hour Acela or whatever. They go to New York. Then they host the Steelers. Then they're at Philly, which is an hour and a half away. Then they are hosting Dallas and hosting Tennessee. Then they have a bye week. So their next legitimate flight is to New Orleans on December 15th, which is still a month and a half away.
Mm-hmm.
Who made this schedule? I mean, what a godsend this is. So to see today that an analytic has them less likely to win the division than Philly, not a human being who's taken into account that the D.C. football organization is going to falter, because of course it is, and the Eagles have just been better, and the Roseman factory of wins over the years and Super Bowl appearances will eventually outlast them. I don't get the sense that's part of the permutation here. So I'm asking not only what I'm missing, but do you agree with me that if you had to make a bet today, it's a better bet to say Washington wins the East than the Eagles?
Well, given the value, the fact that they're under 50%, I'd probably get more money. But just in terms of what I think is going to happen, I still lean Philadelphia. Just again, we haven't been here before, right? We have not. This is new. This is not a 7-10 we win the division because it's the worst division in the history of the sport. This is an unbelievable 6-2, great first half, probably ought to be 5-3 if you don't have a miraculous finish. Not that that's bad. That's, again, better than any expectation I had. Philadelphia's played its best football recently. Washington has turned in a better report card over the course of the full season. I think that's irrefutable, as evidenced by some of the numbers that you referenced, margin of victory and some others. Their defense has played better as the year has gone. There's a bit more trust for me for, you know, A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, Saquon Barkley, you know, Jalen Hurts, the tush push, things like that. I've seen it. I've seen them do really, really well for a long enough time where I'm going, I give them a bit of benefit of the doubt. But it's not some outrage. It's not some kind of like, let me rephrase. It's not outrageous to say, yeah, Washington has as good a shot as anybody. It should be much closer to a coin toss for me. A 10% difference, give or take. I mean, I know it's like 51-45, and the idea is that maybe the Cowboys or whatever is left. I don't buy that. I mean, to me, it should be really close to as even Steven as it could be.
The tie-breaking metrics are also somewhat favorable to Washington, I would point out. Both teams have won their only division game, but the Commanders have a better conference record. You know, in a lot of ways, it may come down to the head-to-head, and maybe they think that an Eagles team matching up with a Commanders team would win those games. But again, if you're basing it just on this season so far, I don't know why you would necessarily assume that. Let's go to the phones, 800-636-1067. Tony's in Long Island on G&D. What's up, Tone?
Guys, how we doing?
Good, buddy.
Good, bro.
Okay, listen, before I get started with football, Brant, I have a bone to pick with you for bad-mouthing Yankee fans last night. I know you saw those two buffoons, right? They were buffoons.
Just idiots.
But listen, they are not a true reflection.
Everybody says that.
Yeah. Tony, they came from Central Casting.
Tone.
They absolutely
Tony
did.
Tony Boombox, I mean, looked like the Yankee fan I imagine in my dream when I'm at Camden Yards and a Yankee fan's annoying me. It's that guy.
Well, they've already taken away their tickets for tonight's game.
Good.
But let me say this, and there's a couple things I want to say to you guys and to also the people that listen. I know you guys have social media and you guys follow social media, and every week we see all these fistfights and all these fans getting beaten up in opposing parks. And I challenge you to find opposing fans that get beat up in Yankee Stadium. They're very few and they're very far between. But if you look at some other stadiums, especially the team that we're playing right now in the World Series, who's actually a much better team than us, their stadium has way bigger problems than the stadium that they're playing in right now.
No doubt about it. But I would challenge you to find any videos of any fans anywhere ever trying to rip the glove off of a player and then grabbing the player's hand.
Yeah.
It's not even the ripping. Yeah. The other moron grabs him by the hand. What is he doing?
I don't know. It's a horrible reflection. But listen, on a night, and this is what makes it worse, and this is my final take on it. On a night where literally you had a dream scenario where an actual Yankee fan, 9 years old, at the parade as a nine-year-old in 2009, he met Derek Jeter as a little leaguer, and I actually know people that know him and his family. Anthony Volpe goes out there and lives his dream. You have an actual Yankee fan living out his dream.
Amazing.
And then those two buffoons take away a little bit of that thunder.
Yeah. Well, I'll be honest. So, like 60% of my anger is toward those idiots, and they are idiots, to be clear. 40% is a pre-anger. And me being furious about the 15 minutes of fame that are coming for that clown.
Because you know they're going to be celebrated.
They will get on talk shows. They'll be on Barstool podcasts or whatever famous podcast wants them. They will get photo ops and high fives. They'll be sitting in a bar eating wings with their picture behind them in a year and getting paid to be there. And I hate how the Sons and Four guy. I hate how we do this in this society where we are just so stupid. Where we glorify the deplorable. And we shouldn't do it, but it is coming. Just wait.
By the way, way to put that hornet's nest on a tee, Tone. Nice job.
Well, listen, it'll be very interesting to see what happens next year. I do know that that kid is a season ticket holder.
Well, not anymore.
It should be NFL.
He'll never be in a game again.
I hope so. I really do. I really do. Now, going to Washington, which has actually been the bright spot for my week.
How about that?
Isn't that funny to say?
You're in the World Series.
Your team's in the big show, the Fall Classic, and you're like, well, let's talk about the football team because that's who's good. Amazing.
Do you want to hear something funny? I'm 50 years old. I started watching the Redskins and the Yankees in 1981. That was the last time the Yankees, they lost in 81. That was the first memory I have as a Yankee fan. And Gibbs came on in 81. Gibbs retires in 92. Jeter gets drafted in 92, and on we go. I've only seen one season where the Yankees have won a playoff round and the Redskins have won a playoff game, 1999. Literally the only year. So I'm looking to make that 2 years out of my life this year.
That's crazy.
It's crazy, right? Going to what you said, in terms of the – I think you have to do a little backwards-looking instead of forward-looking. Where are they coming up with those numbers? We have played one division game each, but they played a road game. We played a home game. We both beat the Giants. So in essence, we have three road games in the division, and they have two. That extra home game that they have at home in the division gives them that edge to win the division. It makes us still more likely to make the playoffs because our schedule is easy, but because three out of two at home, a 3 out of 5 at home for the Eagles, I guess mathematically you almost have to give it to them.
That's possible. It's as good an explanation as I've heard, Tone, and great call as always. But there's also still the cushion. Washington is still a half game in front, which needs to be baked in there somewhere, which could counteract that. I will tell him I am rooting for the Yankees in the World Series.
Big Yankee guy.
Not a Yankee guy. I'm a Juan Soto guy. I also like Aaron Boone, who's been great to deal with in my MLB stuff over the years. So, yeah, I'm rooting for the Yankees to beat the Dodgers. And I also want a long series. And that means I need another win to force a game 6 and then another win to force a game 7.
Just real quick, Tone, I love you. You're our guy. No Yankee fan fights. Yankees fans brawl near stadium after walk-off win versus Orioles. Two Yankees fans ejected after fist fight. Yankees-Mets brawl. Where else I got? Red Sox-Yankees fans. Violent mass brawl erupts between Yankee fans. These fans are pathetic. Yankees fans attack Guardian baseball players. 2022 throwing objects onto the field. Listen, that's every fan base. What I'm telling you is what Yankee fans don't get to do is pretend that it's not you too. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. I wasn't even going to Google it because that is every fan base. What he's reacting to is last night I tweeted, just like that, Yankees fans have dropped 8 spots in my who has the worst morons fan base rankings. That doesn't mean worst fans. That means of the worst of your fans, that one percentile of your fan base, whose are the worst? Those two guys are your one percentile, and they're the first two guys I've ever seen rip a ball out of a glove, try to rip a glove off, and then literally grab the player by the arm over the wall. It was ridiculous. Let's go to Matt in Round Hill.
Hey, Matt.
Where are you at on the Commanders in the NFC East? Should they be viewed as more likely than the Eagles to win the division they currently lead?
So
So just based on gut feel, I'm with you, Grant. I think the Commanders have got to be the favorite. I think where the analytics are coming from, and I'm going to take a slightly different approach from the previous caller, and that is to say that I think the analytics are taking into account the result of our home game against the Giants. Because it was so close, if you're replaying that game on the road, I think it makes it more of a 50-50 ball, right? The computer doesn't get to, you know, understand how much we've improved since then and all that stuff. But I think that that data is getting put into there. And I think the fact that we have to play the Giants on the road, and to Danny's point, you know, historically, that just doesn't go well for us.
I was going to say, if that is the case, thank you for the call, then this weekend would be the tell, right? If we're saying, oh, but we're a lot better than we were as a team when they played the Giants way back in week two. Okay, well, good thing you get to play them again this weekend.
Yeah, what a great way to show that, right?
If they win by 20 this weekend, then what you're saying makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see the Eagles winning that game by 20 if they play again next week or something like that, right? So, yeah, if they are a lot better than they were then, which I think is very possible, then they'll show that in the Meadowlands this weekend. We're Grant and Danny. You're listening to the fans. To the fan, rather.
Well, the fans are calling.
I do want to talk to the fan about the fans of the dummies that grabbed the glove next hour and what should happen to them. I think that is a worthwhile conversation as well. We've also got Someone Explain to Me coming up on Grant and Danny today. G&D, we're with you until 6:30. We'll blitz the NFC East at 5 today on the Fan. Danny, you know all about Mondays around here because oftentimes now they're Victory Monday.
Yeah, so the Washington wins on Sunday, and then we talk about a win on Monday. That's usually how it goes, right?
It wasn't supposed to be Victory Monday. It was supposed to be Tell the Truth Monday.
Oh.
It still is. But the truth doesn't always have to be painful. The truth can just be Washington's really good.
Oh, yeah.
Jaden Daniels is playing at an elite level. The defense is getting better. That was Dan Quinn's signature Tell the Truth Monday. This is symbolism to me of how much winning and good football play can just change your perspective on things. I hated the Tell the Truth Monday bit initially. I don't care about it anymore. After week one with the Bucs when they got destroyed, and I'm like, oh my God, here we go again. That was Ron Rivera's Commanders. Mm-hmm. It was the exact same thing I'm used to. This is going to be such a nightmare of a season. And we're going to, hey everybody, we're going to tell the truth today. We need to be better. Let's Tell the Truth Monday. Take me away. I don't need catchphrases. I don't need slogans. I don't need... Every day's Tell the Truth Day, please. We don't need to lie on other days.
Yeah.
But today's a day, apparently.
Oh?
We've got a new day over at the facility. Dan Quinn spoke to the media today. Wednesday is themed all of a sudden.
As we get started for today, for us, that's back to competition Wednesday. And we really established a precise nature in getting ready, and we never assume it. And that's why we put the work in.
Back to competition Wednesday.
Listen, whatever you're doing, just do it.
Keep doing it, man.
Just do it.
Are we at a point now where it's like all the stuff that we don't like is like endearing? Where it's like the stuff that you want to make fun of and that is really cringy and that you actually don't like and you know isn't a real thing? But it's working, so you just go, whatever.
Me too.
Do you.
Well, for us today, it's back to, what is it? Are we back to competition Wednesday?
My daughter is in kindergarten, and her kindergarten teacher is the sweetest lady.
Mm-hmm.
Prototypical, what you kind of get in a movie kindergarten teacher. Older lady. Lovely lady. And she, when she sends her weekly emails or whatever, when you go in and she says hello, every day is alliteration. So, hello and welcome to Magnificent Monday. And when Reagan walks in, Reagan, are you ready for a terrific Tuesday? Happy, wonderful Wednesday. Today is Thorough Thursday. We'll be extra thorough today. It's a fantastic Friday. Welcome to the class.
Yep.
Like everything.
That's about the level for those things.
You know
kindergarten.
What I'm saying?
Yes.
That is the only other thing like this in my life. Where on all the emails, it's like, the kids had a lovely, that doesn't match anything. Sorry, I got to go back to the
A moment. Wonderful, wacky Wednesday.
Yeah, exactly. But like, I was going to say like a lovely learning lesson on a wonderful Wednesday. And like, that is what we're doing. And my daughter loves it. She's all the way in. She's bought in. She's ready to follow Dan Quinn through over the mountain and through the cave.
So I'll tell you this.
On Wonderful Wednesday. But they're doing that at the park.
Yeah.
It's Tell the Truth Monday. Back to Competition Wednesday. That's the new one today.
For us, that's back to Competition Wednesday.
Listen.
Ugh.
It's let it happen. I'm just telling you that if this goes south, I'm going to make fun of it. All right?
But right now,
yeah. That's what today is. See what I'm saying? Like my eyes roll to the back of my head and I almost pass out. I can't. It's so cringe. But you know what? It's our cringe.
Manny,
it's great.
Being Manny was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
When Manny was hitting 335 with 30 bombs. So right now, let's do it. Let's tell the truth on Mondays.
Find my due north on Tuesday. My feet are where they're supposed to be on Friday. Whatever you want, buddy.
There is something to be said, though.
Uh-huh.
And this is all that matters. You and I on the outside and in grown-up land,
mm-mm,
we can see that this is cringy. Players are loving it.
It's catnip.
They're shoveling it into their mouths like Ezekiel Elliott after a 12-yard runoff tackle in 2017. They're doing the spoon thing. They can't get enough of To Tell the Truth Day and Back to Competition Day.
I wonder why this one works.
Let's all wear our Hawaiian shirts day and all that other stuff.
Yeah, like Wacky Outfit Fridays. I wonder why this one works and Ron Rivera's cheesy ones didn't work. I mean, it's not just personnel. You know, like,
because you have a good quarterback.
Is it that simple?
Because you have a general manager who picked players well.
Yeah.
Because you're a more talented football team. I think that had a lot to do with it.
For us, that's back to Competition Wednesday.
Do you remember when they got on that heater and they had that, I thought it was badass, celebration where Ron would throw one of the guys a stone and they would like launch a rock against the wall. And after each win,
Ron threw a shoulder out on one of those. Yeah. It was like 88 to
like
a spot.
Taylor Heinicke gets the stone and he throws it against the wall. Like, that kind of stuff is awesome. If I was a coach at the youth or high school level, my buddies are coaches. I got a brother-in-law who's a football coach. I got a best buddy who coaches baseball. Like, you got to give out the turnover chain. You got to have, you know, the King George Foxes. Who wears the fox hat after the game? Someone gets to put the fox on their head because you stole the base. You had the hustle play. All that stuff plays, and I think it's important to acknowledge it's not that different at the highest of levels. It's really not.
They're still doing the game.
It's still a game,
mm-hmm,
and it's a kid's game, and you know, you don't have to grow out of that in the locker room setting. I was doing my Altcast with Bruce Boudreau. For those of you that aren't hockey people, longtime coach of the Capitals, went to other organizations, terrific NHL coach for a long time. And I was saying what I love about Spencer Carberry, the current coach of the Caps, and his post-game addresses, the team puts them out after every game, after every win. He does what I would do if I was the coach at the high school or youth level. He goes around the locker room and he points to certain guys. And he says, hey, Danny, nice job winning that puck before the Ovi goal, digging it out of the corner, and everyone claps for him. He grabs the puck for the guy that scored their first goal of the season and tosses it to him. How about Darris getting off the Schneid goal number one? But it's not just the obvious stuff. It's like anybody see big, money metal Chris out there dropping the gloves? Yeah, we're all clap. GP did something nobody noticed, the stick lift right before the defensive play. And he goes around. And it's like such a youthful, you're playing resting shinny hockey. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it's like, you don't got to act like we're all grown-ups. We're just having fun. We're just kids playing hockey. Maybe that's what Dan Quinn's doing. We're just out here telling the truth and getting back to competition.
Yeah, the acknowledgement of the work that's done. I mean, there's different schools, right? There's Bill Parcells, which is, I won't even smile, right? Do your job or you're fired. You're like ruling with an iron fist. Then there's this, everybody buys in, we're all pulling the rope, and we all feel that our mission is critical, no matter how small or you know, seeming insignificant. Like the kickoff team flying down with reckless abandon, knocking dudes into next week. There's a pride in that, right? That you haven't always seen here. There's a level of buy-in. So whatever catchphrase you want to use with that hat around backwards, you use it, DQ. You use it, buddy.
They keep winning?
Yep.
I'm going to keep high-fiving.
New catchphrase a week.
Let's tell the truth on Mondays.
For us, that's back to Competition Wednesday.
Sure.
Mm.
What's Friday? Let's do Fabulous Friday. Can we do that?
Thursday, everybody.
Thorough Thursday. Let's be extra thorough, like Reagan's kindergarten class. G&D on the Fan.